We are born free, and we will die free. The time in between, though, that's complicated.
In that time, governments, institutions, and our egos will limit our ability to find true freedom in this life. These are real stories of real people overcoming the odds, persevering in justice, and unlocking their potential. Welcome to Finding Freedom. Here's your host, John Oderman.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Finding Freedom here on the Lions of Liberty Podcast Network. It is Thursday afternoon, so that means we're live streaming the recording of the show to YouTube, Rumble, Twitter, Facebook, all the places. Even though Facebook this week has now made it so you can't live stream to groups anymore. So we used to stream to our Lions of Liberty Pride and our Lions of Liberty Forum group. No more. You can't do it with StreamYard. You can't do it with Zoom. I don't know what Zuckerberg is doing over there with Meta and Facebook, but he's I don't understand the company. I don't want to go off on a tangent, but Meta, the stock price keeps going up and the product keeps getting worse. And little teaser, we might talk about social media networks and potential competitors to Meta coming up later in the show with my guest today. And I will introduce my guest in just one moment. But before I do that, I just want to remind you all that if you like this show, if you like what we're doing here at Lions of Liberty, please consider joining the Lions of Liberty Pride. You can do that on Patreon or on Locals. Just search Lions of Liberty. It'll pop up. You can see the different tiers that we have and join wherever you're comfortable. We'd love to have you. And Brian and I are actually working on another feature, another offering that we're going to put together for our Pride members. So stay tuned for an announcement there next week. But let's get on with today's show and bring in my guest. My guest is James Whitfield. James is based in St. Paul, Minnesota. He is the founder and CEO at Ex-Offenders Resources Network. It's a network that he built up for ex-offenders, people coming out of prison, to help them to find jobs and get on their feet and get some experience. James himself is an ex-offender, so he's been through it himself and he's overcome those difficulties. We're going to hear about his story. Yeah, he's also a filmmaker. He has a skill set that includes leadership development, business intelligence, licensing. And as I talked about just a moment ago, he's also the founder of a new social media platform that we'll be talking about. So, James, welcome to Finding Freedom.
Hey, thanks, John. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, great to have you on the show. And I think I heard of you. It was a couple of weeks ago. Mutual friend of ours brought your name up and was talking about, you know, some of the things that you've worked on in the past, and well, I'm still working on with ex-offenders, and you know, some of the new stuff you're working on with the social media company. And I'm like, James fits exactly in like the type of person that I want to talk to. Someone who's had the obstacles, had the things they've had to overcome, and you've turned it into, you know, good things on the other side, and you're an entrepreneur. So I always like talking to creative people like yourself. I think a good place to start, though, for my audience to get to know you, let's turn back the clock back to before you went to prison and, you know, before you went through that experience. We'll get to that. But just to set the stage, if you could just talk about, you know, what your life was like you know, at that point in time, where were you living and what were you doing?
Well, at that time, at the first arrest, John, I was arrested several times. So I was like the bad boy who got jammed twice. And then the third time, the feds just decided to bank me off of the second charge. So, but we'll talk about that. But before that, it was 1981. I had a new son. He was just born, and I was in downtown Minneapolis, and I was arrested with another individual for armed robbery. And so I got arrested, and I served time in prison for that, got out. Things got tight. I ended up robbing again because couldn't find a job nowhere. So that landed me in prison again for the next 22 years.
Wow. So let's talk about let's talk about what led you into that life in the first place, where you were putting yourself in situations where you would end up, you know, potentially getting arrested. So how did you find yourself in that situation?
Well, I did the dumb thing. The first charge that I was in, I went to prison. While in there, they have these here forms. Every prisoner should see them. It's called a case summary disposition form. And on there, it clearly stated evidence was insufficient to sustain the conviction. So I'm like, why the hell am I in prison? Oh, if they catch me again, it'll be for something I did. So I went and did the stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended up getting a couple of decades out of my life taken for it, you know. But other than that, I was working. I'm a veteran. I was happy with my two kids, you know, and that's it.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that charge. The ultimately landed you in prison for decades. That it was a bank attempted bank robbery, right?
It was a bank robbery with a note.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had handed a teller a note that had written on it, "This is a holdup," and I got away with it.
So you got away with it. They actually gave you the money.
Yeah, I got the money, and several months later, this is where the haters started coming in, because they started just, I think it might be him. They had no proof that I'd done it. They had no fingerprints or anything to prove I'd done it. And no one could really positively identify me from the photo. Mm-hmm. So, but I ended up in the system, did 6 years, 9 months at Stillwater Prison in Minnesota. After release from Stillwater, there was the FBI and the marshals there to take me into federal custody.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got released from the state system November 19th, 1987. And I did not see freedom again until January 3rd, 2005.
So you went straight from the state system into the federal system?
Yes.
What was that change like, comparing the state system to going into federal prison?
Well, they sent me initially to USP Leavenworth. That was the max. It was crazy because they treated me like I was a mafia figure, because I had the double black box on my arms. I had the real tight short chains on my ankles. And, you know, so it was just, but the federal system from the state system, it was just a little bit more violence in the federal system than there is in the state at the time.
Yeah. How did you navigate that more violent situation?
Well, like any good prisoner, you mind your own damn business, you know. But I worked in the prison law library, you know, so, and I worked there for years and eventually earned my little paralegal degree in there doing that. So no one's going to kill the man that's going to hurt, that's going to get you out of a case. So
that's a good point, yeah.
You know, so anyway, you know, it's like they get in the scenarios. And they come to me, and I had a reputation as the, some call me James Cochran, the unknown brother of Johnny Cochran. Some call me Alan Dershowitz, Johnny Cochran, F. Lee Bailey, all rolled into one, because I always won the cases for them.
And that was all self-taught while you were in prison, from going to the library?
Yeah, going to the law library. First, I was just handing out books, and then people started asking me questions. And I said, well, I think I need to read all these here books so that I have a better understanding that within the span of 2 years, I'd read everything from Title II, the U.S. Constitution in the preamble, all the way to Title 50, War and National Defense, and what constitutes declaring an act of war. Hmm. You know, so I have a photographic memory, you know, so most of the things is just there.
It's like you ever seen the TV show Suits?
No, John.
There's a character on that show, Mike Ross. He's a photographic memory, and he's posing as a lawyer. It's a good show. You should check it out. But anyway, it made me think of that.
But I stopped watching TV, and believe it or not, TV and sports in like 1982.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Michael Jordan and Hakeem Olajuwon were in their last year of college playing basketball. So I mean, there was more important things to do. And inside the prison, you need to learn to stay alive. You ain't got time to sit around and watch something on TV.
Yeah, I can definitely see how that could be the case. So let's talk about, so you're focused, you're in prison. Your time in there is winding down. How were you preparing yourself to get ready, or was there anything you were doing to prepare yourself to get ready to be released?
Well, you know, people ask that question all the time, and I tell them, say, I was never focused on what goes on around me in there. In other words, my mind was already set for the streets. Hmm. Even all 27-odd years, my mind was on the streets. I didn't get involved with the prison politics and the little games or gangs or whatnot, drugs, none of that. You know, and it's, you know, for some people, it's hard to maintain that mainframe, you know, of staying focused on the outside world as opposed to what's going on in there while living in there. But, you know, that's how I was. You know, some people, they can compartmentalize things and some can't.
So were you ever worried, though, you know, because you had a history where you committed a bank robbery. Were you worried that when you got released, you would go back into that same lifestyle?
No, I wasn't going back. I did too much time in there. You know, I had suffered too many losses, family members, and then no visits from family. You know, so you learn that, you know, you have to take care of yourself because no one's really going to give a damn about you. You know, so you can put yourself in those situations and think and believe that they will be there. But the bottom line is they grow up, they have families, they have lives. And if you've ever read the book by, I can't even remember the guy's name, but it was a passage in his book. He says, parents, know that your children are no longer your own once they retain a certain age. Brothers and sisters, realize that your siblings are nothing more than the deepest level of friends you will ever have. So don't expect them to, you know, basically be there and supportive of you like you were when you were children.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, and I think probably a lot of people who have been to prison can relate to that, that you're cut off from your family, you know, from the outside world. And when you come back out, when you came back out, you know, it was totally different for you. Can you explain what that was like? Did you have anyone on the outside that was a support system?
Well, I had a series of pen pals that I was writing, and they would come visit and stuff, but immediate family, relatives, nah. Mm. That wasn't happening. So, and I met a lady and we got out. I got out in 2005 and we stuck it out until the beginning part of 2009. And then she began to get a little pushy and always threatening to call my probation officer and calling down. And they just said, James, she's going to be the cause of you going back. Mm. Not for anything you've done, but just probably so you get some peace of mind, you know, so. But all in all, her and I, you know, we see each other now. We're somewhat on good terms, but I realized that if I was going to catch on, to the technology and everything now, I had to immerse myself in learning it all over.
Yeah. Well, let's start to talk about that, because, you know, one thing in your story is that, you know, you had all this experience with the law that you gained while you were in prison, helping other prisoners to, you know, reduce their sentences and get out. And when you got out, you were trying to, you know, catch on with a law firm. It's like a paralegal, correct?
Yep. I applied at John, there's probably about 1,000 law firms here in the Twin Cities between Minneapolis and St. Paul. I've applied at every last one of them and was shot down by every last one. Now, I took a 3-year paralegal course that I completed in 11 months with an A- average. I had reference letters from judges, state court judges, federal court judges all throughout the United States, because I've done cases and appeals in every federal circuit in the United States, from the 11th Circuit down in the Florida area up to the 1st Circuit up by Maine, you name it, I've done it. You can go to the court records and look the records for James Whitfield, they'll find my name right there, as prepared by James Whitfield, prisoner 03425041. But, and I had a stack of reference letters and a list of over 800 cases that I successfully remanded back to federal court.
Wow.
I mean, most lawyers, they can't even boast that. I'm like, but damn, come. But still.
So what response would you get back from these law firms? Would you get any response back?
Well, they would tell me, they would say, your record is impressive, and your roster of cases you've helped to get back in the court is impressive. They say, but you have a crime that invokes fear, robbery. They said, if you'd have had a drug charge or a murder charge, we'd hire you in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Get the hell out of here. How does that make sense?
That doesn't make any sense.
But they said that robbery has the element of violence and danger. Well, murder is final. I mean, you know, how much damage can you get than that? But it was crazy, and it always seems that I'd have to go through the first lawyer, the first initial interview. They'd actually come back for a second interview. Then they sneak in a third attorney, and usually it's always the third attorney, is always a black attorney to escort me out the building.
Really?
Yeah. So, but then years later, I see those same attorneys and they say, well, what are you doing nowadays? I tell them, well, I started a nonprofit organization called Ex-Offenders Resource Network. They said, yeah, we've heard that it's recognized literally all over the world. I said, yes, I could help you go global too, but you didn't want to give me an opportunity.
So let's talk about that. So before Ex-Offenders, you're getting shut out from, you know, working as a paralegal. Where did you find your first job?
Well, I ended up starting my own little legal research firm, John. It was called J. Witt Legal, LLC. Hmm. And that was in Northeast Minneapolis. And I was getting referrals from attorneys and state court judges to, you know, to help prisoners with cases and stuff like that. So,
and then did you build that up, or did you move on to something else, or what happened from there?
Well, around 2008, I was going through burnout. You know, I'd been dealing with it for so long, and then I had the office, and, you know, then I was dealing with issues with the young lady I was living with at the time. And so I struck out, and I got another little job, it was through a temp agency, and we made medical devices, you know, like them EpiPens and stuff like that. So, and from there, that lasted about, that was like a 6-month assignment. Then after that, things kind of just dried up. And then in February 2010, I had a stroke.
Oh, wow.
And, as a result, they found a lot of blockage going through different hospitals and the Mayo Clinic. a needle was broke off in my leg, so they had to amputate my leg below the right below the right knee. Yeah. So you heard that expression, busier than a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest, John?
I've heard it, yeah.
That'd be me. I guess you could say that'd be me.
So they broke a needle off in your leg that a doctor did?
Or? Yeah, but John, I was in so much pain and everything that it didn't dawn on me that I could have sued him.
Yeah.
But I was like, just as you know, I went from 238 pounds down to 168 pounds in about 2 months.
Wow.
I was in that much pain.
Ooh. That's rough, man. I'm sorry. Sorry you went through that. That sounds brutal.
Hey, who knows? Maybe that was God's way of saying, we're going to see just how tough you really are.
That's how he works. So where did the idea for ex-offenders come from? How did that come about?
Well, I kept trying and the lady, my wife, who's pictured behind me back there on the wall up there, mm-hmm. you know, she says, James, why don't you just do something since no one will give you a job? You do something to help others that's coming out that will face the same or similar circumstances that you do. Trying to get a job. So start a nonprofit. So she's the inspiration behind the nonprofit.
So when you start this nonprofit, I mean, what kind of goals and vision for it did you have initially? Was it like, were you thinking very localized or what were your thoughts?
No, John, we had plans to go nationwide mm-hmm. and globally if possible. Now, here's the interesting thing about the global aspect of Ex-Offenders Resource Network is I developed a 13-page symposium agreement that I submitted. Well, let me back up. I was on this one site called About Me, and I ran into this lady named Sue Clifford in London, England. She runs a similar program called No Offense. Hmm. CIC, that's what they call nonprofits over there, not NPOs over here. But so Sue has a vast network. And so I sent her a copy of my documentary film and this year's symposium agreement, international symposium agreement for other organizations to join us and helping to address some of the problems that the governments in our respective countries wouldn't. So it's called the International Coalition for Reentry Affairs. It's sort of like a miniaturized version of the United Nations. Mm. We address hunger relief, food support, homelessness, you name it. We do it all.
And where does the funding come from for that?
You know, son, here's the interesting thing. I've been running this nonprofit organization for 11 years now. Since October, October would be 11 years. October 25th, 2013. I've been funding it myself. We're eligible for funds and funding and grants, mm-hmm. but you can't find a grant writer. Everyone said they know how to write a grant, and then come to find out that they really don't. And the interesting thing is in 2015, the United States Department of Labor, they did a 13-page story on me called Getting Back to Work After an Absence or an Illness. And the United States Department of Labor, they said that they receive over 1,000 letters per week asking how to get in touch with me.
Really?
And how they can be in touch. And it says, do you have a grant writer? If you have a grant writer, we have billions of money, of funds set aside. Get a grant writer and we can get some of that money to you and your organization. But I actually run the organization. I was running it off of $300 a month.
Hmm.
And I made contacts and the people donated resources and other items in kind. So, hey, we're good.
Okay. So you spoke a moment ago there about a documentary film, and I know that you're a filmmaker. So where does that fit in this puzzle? When did you learn how to do that?
Okay. Well, after I gave up on trying to work in the law firms and shortly after the stroke and I got the prosthetic leg back, I told my wife, I said, you know, I'm done trying that. It's been 8 years I've been trying to get a job in these damn law firms and all this. So I said, I think I'm going to learn television and video production. Now, I didn't know that there was one closer to my home, but I ended up driving because I lived in Blaine, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And so I had to drive over to St. Paul, Inver Grove Heights, another suburb, just to learn how to make films and be a TV cameraman and run it, help co-produce TV shows. So, and that's where they introduced me to another, with a public access cable TV station, mm-hmm. where they was just starting to do a documentary program called the DocU program at the St. Paul Neighborhood Network, SPNN. My video, Bridging the Gap from Prison to Workforce, can be found on YouTube.
Okay. So what year was that you released that doc?
That was in September of 2013.
Okay.
And the following month, I started Ex Offenders Resource Network off of the idea and the concept of that documentary film.
That's pretty cool. So with Ex Offenders Resource Network, are there a lot of testimonies that you get from people, you know, people reaching out to you and thanking you for, you know, connecting them with employment?
You know, some people do and some mm-hmm. don't. You know, it's just some people, they just think, oh, you got a nonprofit, or the government giving you money. No, let me explain something to you. I tell them that all of the rules, the policy procedures, all the handbooks, I wrote those. I know the law. I don't need an attorney. No one's funding me. I put my money in to help you. And if you're going to be disrespectful, you can go ahead. But I don't need thanks from them. You know, it's just want them to know that, hey, we have a vast resource of employers in Minnesota and around the world that are set up to help people get jobs.
So, yeah, speaking of employers, so how did you initially find employers to opt into it?
Well, I'd go out to them and I'd say, hey, how you doing? Are you the manager? And they said, no, but hold on, we'll get him. I said, hi, my name is James Whitfield. Mm-hmm. I said, look, I just made a short documentary film and I'm an ex-offender and I'd like to talk with you about you guys' hiring policies and how it may impact ex-offenders. And they looked at me and I said, well, if you just give me 10 minutes and just watch this short documentary, that's all I asked. If you don't like it, I'll never come in your office again. By the time the movie was done, they offered me a job. I said, no, this is my job.
Yeah, but it really wasn't you. You weren't getting paid for it, right? You're not making money.
No, I wasn't,
off of it.
But yeah. No. You know, but the thing is, that's why I came up with my other project later. But anyway, yeah. And besides my wife, you know, she was supportive and she says, hey, don't worry about it. I got you. You just take care of our house here and me and don't worry about mm-hmm. it, you know. So.
Yeah, I was just going to say I've interviewed, you know, 200 formerly incarcerated, you know, individuals, people, you know, been to prison, felons, just like yourself. And it is interesting that there is this common thread, not between everyone who goes to prison, but there is this, you know, select group of people who, once they get out, like yourself, want to help others, like turn around and, you know, you're not pulling the ladder up behind you. You're you know, leaving the ladder down. And I just think that's so, I mean, it's awesome. I just think it's really interesting. I just wanted to note that.
Well, you know, John, the thing is, and what the audience needs to know is that the vast majority of people who are in there, they have genuine good hearts initially. Just as something that they were doing got them caught up and put them in a position, put them in storage. Mm-hmm. That's why I call it. People say, where you been the last while? I was in storage. Storage could be, you know, I was married. Or I was out the way or whatever, you know, or you're in prison. So, but the vast majority of people incarcerated, they have good hearts and genuine like people already. Mm-hmm. It's just that there's the stigma attached to ex-prisoner, convict, all this, that people kind of want to shy away from.
Do you think that that stigma, I mean, you founded ex-offenders more than 10 years ago. Do you think that stigma has gotten less? So do you think things have improved with regards to the view towards ex-offenders from 2013 until today?
No. Yeah. It's still, it might have went down a smidgen, mm-hmm. John, but not much. You know, but here's the sad thing, is when you have a country with over 300 some million people in it, close to 400 million, and you have nearly 200 million of them that has some type of felony record or arrest record on them, it's kind of hard for you to be an asshole. Oh, excuse my language. It's kind of hard for you to be a jerk and still, you know, view people in this negative light, you mm-hmm. know?
No, that makes sense. So let's pivot here and let's talk about some of your other projects. I know when we talked on the phone, we talked a lot about this social media network that you're working on. Also, I know that you've had you've done a bunch of. Is it radio or TV?
John, I've had my own podcast. It was Awesome Radio, yeah. Our Turn Social Media Network Radio.
Tell us about our turn or
our turn social media network, yeah. The radio or the TV or
let's start with the radio and the TV and then we'll move to the network.
Okay. All right. So in 2019 up to 2021 operated Our Turn Social Media Network Radio. And we interviewed up-and-coming music artists, music producers here in the Twin Cities. Some of them who had stepped away from it and doing other things, they would tell them, contact James Whitfield. He has all the plugs to the music industry. So I would interview up-and-coming music artists, actors. A good friend of mine, John Nicholson, he played Detective Rod Demery on the TV show Murder Chose Me on the Discovery Channel. And then Jim Cressman, he's president and CEO of Invictus Entertainment up in Penticton, British Columbia, Canada up there. And he has a roster of the vast majority of the country music artists coming out of Canada are on his label. And so we'd interviewed them and then I'd interview other ex-offenders and, you know, just to see where their head's at, see what direction they wanted to go, what they wanted to do.
And, I just pulled up the page now in front of me. Yeah, it looks like you were still doing those interviews in 2021. So is that still going on, or are those interviews still happening?
Well, I'm going to reactivate the podcast, John, because the podcast – and my Our Turn Social Media Network TV, they're all being blended into the new social media site.
So what is the social media site? If you can, I know it's kind of it's hard to explain and it's hard for me to even comprehend as we were talking about this before without seeing a visual, but explain what it is.
Okay. Well, imagine a social media network site where you never have to leave off the channel for nothing. You want to go back to school? We have education systems in there where you can go back and you can get a college degree or whatever. You can learn new technology. I mean, whatever you want to do. Like we have one of our partners is the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. So they're one. We did have edX.org, but edX been sold out. So we're no longer affiliated with them. But we're at one point. We were connected with 225 of the world's top Ivy League colleges and universities around the world, mm-hmm. from the Helsinki Institute in Japan to the University of Tokyo, you name it, the Sorbonne in Paris, France. We were plugged in everywhere. That's my well, let me back up here.
Sure.
In 2017, let me back up. After the 2015 story by the United States Department of Labor, in April of 2016, myself, a gentleman named Mike Friedrich. Mike has Allison.com. It's an online education platform, one of the first online MOOCs, which is multiple open online courses. And it's Allison with one L. But me, him, and Judge Honorable James E. Dehn, D-E-H-N, of Isani County, we met to discuss creating an alternative sentencing platform whereby the judge would have he has the discretion to sentence a person to prison, or he can send them to Ex-Offenders Resource Network to complete the educational program is provided by myself, Microsoft, and through Mike Friedrich's program, Allison.com. Mm-hmm. And if they successfully complete it, then that will be their sentence. Because he believed that education helps to change the criminal mind. So from there, and 2 months later, I entered the mayor's race to run for mayor of Blaine, Minnesota. I was on the ballot, James Edward Whitfield. Hey, running a nonpartisan for the office of mayor, which is a city of about 66,000 residents.
Mm-hmm.
And I came within 1,000 votes of becoming the mayor of Blaine.
Well, why did you want to become the mayor?
Well, one, it was just say, why not? You say, hey, you did. I made a film. I never made a film, so yeah. I want to do try everything at least once. And also, I lived in a county, Anoka County, which a lot of people consider as the racist county, no blacks. So I wanted to be the first black candidate to run for mayor in an all-white city.
Okay. And you almost did it. You said just 1,000 votes. Wow.
Yeah, you know, so. But anyway, and now if you listen to the election judges, they'll tell me, James, you really did win the election. The police chief did not want our next con as his boss.
I'm someone who believes, I'm not saying all elections are rigged. I'm just saying the system we have, it's open to happen. So I'm sure it does happen sometimes.
Yeah. So, and then after the race and then Ex-Offenders Resource Network, we begin tackling the homelessness problem in Minnesota and on the East Coast. We were in a position to get a former VA medical facility out in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I worked with the mayor of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, William Peduto, and his staff in Allegheny County and all that. Oh, yeah, we was having this talk.
We were talking that Peduto, he's famous for in Pittsburgh. He wanted to turn, well, he actually did. He was putting bike lanes on every street in the city of Pittsburgh. And if you know anything about Pittsburgh, it's cold for about half the year, and you can't. No, nobody's using bike lanes, so people didn't like it very much. But
So anyway, you know, the facility that we were looking at, it was situated on 248 acres of land, and as a nonprofit organization, I would have been able to get that property free of charge. I had a team of investors with a pool of about $14 million to help with the renovation, the city of Pittsburgh, and a lot of construction companies in town. They were going to come through, do the mold remediation and all that. Mm-hmm. And I had donors that would donate beds and clothing and food items. It would have been enough to house 4,000 people. You know, so, but we got shot down on that because, believe it or not, we had included that we would also help the homeless veterans and the United States Department of Health and Human Services. They struck it down because we included the homeless veterans.
Because they already have a VA for that. And
right. And I was like, that's dumb. I said, hell, I'm a vet, you know, but, you know, and then there's a lot of veterans in prison, you know, so it's like, come on. So you're trying to help people to bounce back and. But the resources, and then after that, in December of 2018, I received an invitation only to the Forbes Speakers Bureau at the Forbes office in Manhattan. I couldn't stay and attend the entire thing, but I did go there for at least the first day and a half. You know, my wife got sick, so I had to get back home. In July of 2019 is when I launched the radio station. Mm-hmm. In December of 2019, we launched Our Turn Social Media the first time. We picked up about 10 to 15,000 members right away. Then I had to learn how to write code and everything myself because I'd paid someone before to do it. So this way, so it's been down. Now it's been rebuilt. And but in between, so we're going to relaunch here within, after this call, after this show, I'll be on the phone with one of the programmers, a guy who's going to come in and help me because everything about the site I built myself. So
will it be, I know you were talking about you'll be able to, sort of one-stop shop. And I think I'm mixing up our call before, but where, there's going to be like commerce attached to it. And also you were talking about the education attached to it. Will it also be just, like similar to Facebook and Twitter where users are, can post their thoughts and news stories and things like that?
I mean, it's just imagine just like the same things that they have on Facebook, but double and triple what they have.
Yeah.
Because on there, you can find, you can join friends, you can develop groups, you can do. We even have a section on there that's like the old Craigslist where you can post, trade, sell, buy, whatever. You can find jobs on there. We're not going to do the intimate encounter.
Yeah,
section,
don't mess with that. Anyway, you don't want to mess around with that.
Everything else. Yeah. We also have a shopping network that's built into the site. I have an affiliate program that I work with. There's 1,841 stores and other business services you can shop from. Yeah.
It sounds really, really interesting. I use Facebook because that's where, I have a big network of people that I talk to and I, like seeing what they post. But when you look at like the product of what Facebook is, it has gotten worse and worse every single year. And I was talking about at the top of the show with Meta. You look at the stock price for Meta. Meta is made up of Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, whatever else Zuckerberg has for different virtual reality headsets.
There's a total of 67 businesses that they own. And I blocked all 495,000 of their IP addresses because if you hacked me before, you won't get a damn chance to do it again.
Yeah, and I'm sure they'll try. I'm all for disruption in this space. I think it's desperately needed. Well, so I wish you, you all the luck in the world for that. Do you have an estimated date on when you think you'll be able to release it? Open it up.
I'm just going to say it's going to be after we were going to launch on April 9th. But I got up, Google had all of the back-end information on Google. So I had to contact Google, hey, take that down, remove all that. So they did. But and so we don't know what happened or how it got populated out like that. But then there was attempts to inject this here, the viruses into the system. I have 6 regular security perimeters, and then I have 3 double encryption systems built in to protect the site and the user's data and their privacy.
Yeah. That kind of reminds me, the other thing that can make a social media site not work as well as it should, like on Twitter, where Twitter is just filled with all of these bots where, half of your new followers and half of your people who comment and like your post are just bots of,
No.
It really takes away from the experience.
Well, see, here's something else. Is not only do we have the stores, we have a filmmaking app built into the site. So you can take films from my TV channel and through an agreement with Our Turn Social Media Network, you can even remake old classics of the films that I own in my collection. Mm-hmm. And then all it takes is an additional 10 minutes out of an old film to now make it your own film. So if you had 10 minutes from a movie from the 1930s and say, now this is how we're doing it in 2024, you know, and just add in, you know, something. And that's all it takes is just that little bit of creativity in 10 to 15 minutes. And now it becomes your work.
So it's movies that you own the rights to from the 1930s? Or?
Well, you know, John, I ain't going to get into how I got them on here because I don't want everybody trying to jump on my secret. But, yeah, I can get free movies. I can get every game out there from Call of Duty and all that, which I don't know nothing about. But I can get any and all that stuff free. Mm-hmm. And it's on my channel. I do have languages built into my channel, so you can learn Japanese on there. You can learn Spanish. You can learn Italian. It's kind of hard to find French. Well, I can find a lot of German courses on there that they can use. But, you know, so the TV, the radio, the site, the social media, the filmmaking app, we have there's so much more. I mean, it's just a lot. And a lot of them are revenue generating streams.
I remember when we talked about before, you were saying it was more localized.
No. You know, so now that's something it's not local. This is global, John.
Okay.
And you know, so it's all around the world right now. On Microsoft Copilot, I'd ask, what is Our Turn Social Media Network about? And they said, Our Turn Social Media Network is a site that is designed to revolutionize and reshape the landscape, the social media landscape. They said it's been called an anomaly, an unparalleled digital enterprise, and one of the sites called it an entire media conglomerate in one platform. So they're saying that Awesome is very disruptive in the social media space. Now they can buy me out, you know.
Yeah, man. I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to getting my eyes on it and seeing just what it looks like. We're running down on time here, so before I let you go, during the course of this interview, is there anything that you really wanted to talk about that you didn't get a chance to talk about? Or is there a message that you want to double down on and communicate again to my audience before I let you go?
Well, whatever it is that you've gone through, you know, just find something that you like and you're passionate about and devote time and energy to that. Don't let no one sway you away from your dream, your passion, because it is what will pay you off in the end. Some people get in for the money. Some just do it because they, you know, want to do something, you know, humanitarian-like. Mm-hmm. But whatever it is, you know, just stay focused and don't let no one drag you down or drag you back to that old life. Please, it's not worth it. I've been there, and if I had to do it all over again, if someone would have had this talk with me, I never would have went and did the second thing.
Yeah, well, that's wise advice, and it's coming from a man, you know, a band like you that has lived it and walked it. So I hope my audience really takes those words to heart. James, I want to thank you for coming on the show, being so open, sharing your story. You know, I'm sure your story today will help someone down the road when they hear it. I wish you the best of luck here in the future Our Turn Social Media and everything else that you're working on. And thank you for coming on Finding Freedom.
All right, then. Thanks, John. Hey, thanks for having me. You have a great evening, folks. All right. Bye-bye.
You too. All right. That was my interview with James Whitfield. You can find all of the links to everything that we talked about on lionsofliberty.com on the show notes page there. I'll be back next week with another awesome interview. In the meantime, if you could please, wherever you're watching this or listening to it, you could please subscribe to that channel, app, whatever it is. We're trying to build up our Rumble audience here, and YouTube has us shadow banned. So if you're a video person, check out Rumble. It's a better app for us. But if you like podcasting, wherever you're listening to it, be sure to hit subscribe wherever that is. And that's all I got for this week, guys. I will see you all next week with another great interview. In the meantime, always remember to keep your head up and the fires of liberty burning.